Blog Talk Radio.
Loved ones there in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, that's right. We're down here, and the same to you in Kansas City there, where you're broadcasting live.
And, yes, we're broadcasting from the studios in the Metropolitan Complex right here on the edge of downtown Kansas City. In fact, we're looking out the window right now. It's an overcast, very overcast day, Don. They've been predicting snow for the last 3 days, but we haven't seen any, you know, kind of knock on wood. Last year, they had 35 inches of snow. But anyways, we're just down the street from the federal courthouse here in downtown Kansas City and just a couple blocks away from the highly touted public light district, big commercial district, in, if you will. So anyways, we're enjoying ourselves here. Tell me it's pretty cold and kind of dreary up in the Twin Cities.
Yes, yes, and I guess they're expecting some more snow up there too. So probably a nice time to be away from Minneapolis at this point. So
yes, sir, yes, sir. Well, Don, what do we have today on this beautiful Christmas Kwanzaa, if you will, for those that celebrate whatever activities they do? Big undertaking here in Kansas City to help the needy. Particularly hungry children. Can you imagine hungry children in America?
Yeah.
With trillions of dollars that we move back and forth and stimulus money, et cetera. But big project here. A lot of poor families, black and white, Hispanic, being fed over the last couple of days. A lot of publicity, if you will, and coverage being given to it. A lot more, Don, than takes place in the Twin Cities. And we're supposed to have a reputation of being a very benevolent and philanthropic city, but it looks here in Kansas City, they're doing a whole lot more.
Yeah, and here, just to bring that point up, yesterday I had an opportunity to go to Triangle Creek Mall, in right outside of Raleigh, North Carolina here. And I'm going to tell you, Mr. Edwards, I've never seen in my lifetime that many African-American people out shopping and spending their money in the mall. It was equivalent to like a Southdale, Richdale, or Brookdale mall, and, well, Brookdale's closed now, but with all the same top-of-the-line stores. But the difference is, for every 20 people there, 12 of those people were, well, actually 13 to 14 was of color. And it was really
something.
Good to see that. Yeah, see that e-commerce happening and see it flexing, and I think of Minneapolis, you know, going out, because my wife and I went out to Ridgedale right before we left out of town, and, I mean, you had to really hunt and look to see another person of color in there. And it's just, it's total opposite down here, just total opposite.
Don, just on that particular note, here in Kansas City, last night I was on the Plaza, for those that are familiar with Kansas City, the Plaza is an old retail area, beautiful place, kind of made in the style of Spain, if you will, Spain of the 17th, 16th century. Place, a lot of lights, very decorative and et cetera. And, you know, basically saw something approaching pretty much the same numbers. You know, they have the very exquisite stores and et cetera there, but large numbers of African-American shopping, large numbers of African-Americans being employed, which is also, unfortunately, something you don't see in our enclave. You don't see a lot of African-Americans working in the stores, in the so-called shopping malls, and et cetera. And as I said, the Plaza is a very exclusive area, lot of African Americans both working there and involved in purchases and et cetera. So, you know, I guess it's like when you reported from Washington a couple months ago,
yeah.
And I from Omaha and Denver about a month later. Just seems to be something a little bit different, and yet we're supposed to be in one of the most liberal enclaves in America. You know what I mean? Political juggernaut, congressman who was of Muslim persuasion, you know, a legislative district which is probably in its entirety probably, I don't know, about 8 or 9% black. But, maybe at some point somebody can explain it to us.
Yeah, we would need an explanation because I actually took some video footage because I know people would tell me, oh, no, I'm not hearing that, I'm not believing that. But believe me, I walked through the wall and they were happy to smile for the camera, okay? I was also out there at the same time that television station WRAL was out there in Raleigh here, and they were doing the same thing. They were getting some pieces, you know, talking about the last-minute shopping to folks and things like that. And so it was a great opportunity. As a reporter from Minneapolis that deals with civil rights and issues of economic development and inclusion and obstruction by government agencies and city agencies that don't let black people have access, even if they want to work. They don't have access to opportunities so that they can make the choices like these people here in Raleigh can do freely. So.
You're absolutely correct. I just left an area prior to coming back to and arriving here at the Metropolitan Studios in the Metropolitan Complex. I just left an area there at 12th and in Brooklyn. African American businesses, the legendary Gates Barbecue, one corner.
Oh, wow.
A couple of African American additional businesses, the whole four corners of that particular area, African American businesses ranging from cafes, laundromats, hairstyle places, training colleges, and et cetera. And, you know, just on those four corners here in Kansas City, more African-Americans owning businesses and being employed by African-American entrepreneurs than probably all of Minneapolis. I did not say
wow.
St. Paul, but it's all of Minneapolis. And you kind of pinch yourself when you come back. We had a little activity and party Thursday night here at Gates. Had a chance to be briefed and familiarized with a PAC group that has been operating in Minneapolis. And I was a little surprised. I had heard something, Don, when I was in Omaha at a Pacific meeting that we talked about on point. I didn't realize that Impact in Minneapolis is nothing more than a franchise for the CBC, or the Black Congressional Congress.
Well, that is very shocking. But you know, Mr. Edwards, that same topic. You know, I had interviewed the executive director over there this summer. Right,
I remember you did. Yes, yes.
And it was really funny because I had asked these guys at Impact Minnesota, I said, who are you? I mean, I don't know, it's a rhetorical question because I know that Matt Intenza, who was running for governor, had a lot to do with it. I know that Congressman Ellison, Representative Jeffrey Hayden, State Representative Bobby Joe Champion all signed off on this thing, okay? So I just asked the executive director, I says, well, who do you want in office? And he goes, well, we're really pushing to have Mark Dayton in office. And then secondly, I asked him, I says, well, have you reached out to the Republicans, the Green Party, the Independents, and the Undecided? And he says, well, you know, we've made calls, but, you know, we're really looking to see Mark Dayton in office. But, you know, as a nonprofit organization, it's just, you're not supposed to do that. And now, you know, we break the news today that this is a franchise out of the, you know, Black Congressional Black Caucus. And
Congressional Black Caucus. Now, Angela Ray, the executive director of, she will become the executive director of the CBC. She's over from the Homeland Security Committee, by the way, where she is the executive director and general counsel for my good friend out of Mississippi, Bernard Thompson. But she's moving over. She's going to work, in fact, for the 5th Congressional Congressman here in Missouri, and that's the Reverend Emmanuel Cleaver. and she's going to work for him, and will be heading up the CBC's executive offices, being joined by a couple of new staffers. Emmanuel Kleber is, as I said before, is new chair. But I was a little taken back. Had an interesting conversation Friday night, last night, about this, because I was trying to get a little bit more information about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that being that the impact is really under the auspices of the CDC.
Yeah, so they're not looking forward to anything but keep people, you know, voting that D and, you know, keeping things the same. So there's no successful measurable outcomes there at all.
No, and it's really so sad because, you know, the CBC is doing some nice things, and Ms. Ray will be coming into office with Representative Emmanuel Kleber as the 112th Congress opens for business January 3rd or 4th, whenever it officially happens. But I have to tell you, in light of the interview that I heard that you did, IBNN did officially with the person who identified themselves as the director of Impact Minneapolis, Impact Minnesota, they should have, I thought, been more transparent with you. You understand? Because Ms. Ray is clearly identified in all materials that we have reviewed and has been confirmed by the congressman. She is a co-founder of Impact.
Wow. Very interesting. Now the truth slips out, creeps out, you know, after, you know, that election. And Impact Minnesota did a very poor job at outreach in North Minneapolis. You know, you had over 20,000 people that didn't bother to go to the polls. And you're looking at what's going on over there, and no one, one fatal thing that happened, you know, with Impact Minnesota focusing on the DFL was that, you know, they had Pat Anderson from the Republican Party that was running as state auditor against Rebecca Otto. Now, you have to put blame in both places, but if Rebecca or if Pat Anderson would have came to North Minneapolis one time and gotten the group in the forum and say, hey, you elect me, I'm going to audit some of these 200 nonprofits in North Minneapolis, I guarantee she would have been in office today. But unfortunately, you know, the Republicans and Pat Anderson didn't bother to do that, so...
You're absolutely correct. You know, another part, Don, I want to point out so that our friends back in the Twin Cities are clear on is that in the mission statement that was developed by Ms. Ray as a co-founder of Impact, it says the following, if I could, just in 15
yes,
seconds.
Please.
A nonprofit organization, Impact is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to enhance knowledge of the political and legislative process, foster civic engagement, and enhance economic empowerment opportunities for other emerging leaders of color. Now, remember this, ages 21 to 40. You know, I can remember Kenya McKnight and others who were, you know, posting this up. I remembered how they kept saying that they had determined that the grouping that they wanted to be involved with would be 21 to 40, and they really didn't want to be involved with older African Americans, et cetera. And I thought that was good imagination and innovation. And now I find out that they took this right out of the mission statement of Impact USA, which actually was founded by the CBC.
Yes, exactly. And I'm actually looking right now at their website. And it's really funny because what they have for Impact Minnesota anyway is a bunch of pictures rolling by with, you know, kids on stage dancing and some of the events they put on that really weren't, I don't feel in my mind, focused toward, you know, doing that grassroots door knocking, boots on the ground, inviting people to vote, telling about the causes. But then again, there's a flip side to that. These people, they wanted, you know, they wanted the DFL infrastructure in place. It's birth of the DFL infrastructure. So there's no reason for them to do anything. So it's pretty interesting. And then we have, a couple things going on here. I just thought I saw a screen. Let me see if I can stop it here. You know, the keynote, this Corey Day was the gentleman that I talked with, but he was also interviewed in Insight News and tried to be positioned as a political player in North Minneapolis.
Okay.
That same week he was on interviewed on Al McFarland's show and in his newspaper. It was the same week that I went over there just by happen chance and stopped in and got him on videotape saying, yeah, we want Mark Baden and, you know, we know we haven't talked to anybody in the Republican Party. And they were just straight up pushing, you know, the DFL agenda. And again, you know, when you push one side like that without full disclosure, you get the results that we had in North Minneapolis, one of the poorest voter turnout among people of color in the United States. And just another thing to add to the list of disparities in North Minneapolis.
And by the way, that voter turnout continues to be consistent, unfortunately, year in and year out. In fact, there are a couple precincts in what I refer to as the 5th City Council ward. There are some precincts that have sometimes less than 20% voters, and yet those precincts are as heavy as 90-95% African Americans.
Yes,
I feel very badly, and just kind of wrapping this up, don't want to, you know, beat it to death, but the fact that we're breaking this story here on Point on Christmas Day, that there was not the kind of transparency that you, in the course of extracting information, that we were, the citizens of the Twin Cities were not told the truth about the point of origin of impact. And I went back and reviewed on computer the, as you just are doing there in Raleigh, some of the promotional pieces that Mr. McFarland and others ran in the paper, because I remember there was some irritation with us on Point, with you, Mr. Allen, and myself, that we raised any kind of questions about impact. And we, I remember, raised the question in the summer about the importance of transparency, and I remember to the October program, the October 2nd program, I remember that where I was in Omaha, we had gotten some feedback, and we asked them to clarify. I remember we had the young lady who was with the Black Chamber of Commerce, and during that particular program, impact came up. And while we were continuously being told that transparency was the order of the day and that we really didn't know what we were talking about, you know.
Yes, exactly. And I'm trying to look around here to see the connection with the CDC, you know, and there's not very much on the line right now where I'm looking at, but I will do a thorough research and kind of figure that out, what's going on. Hey, Mr. Evers, did you like the music that I played in the beginning?
Yes, I did. What was it? Who was it featuring?
That was Dexter Hall's. There's an online site here that's giving away tons of free MP3 Christmas music, and that they would normally charge 99 cents for. And so I picked up a couple of songs, and, you know, throughout the hour, so here we'll go ahead and maybe play a little. They're only like, they're less than a minute, actually. So it's a nice break and then segue and things like that. But I also wanted to tell you something else, Mr. Edwards. An email was leaked to me from the POLAD Foundation. Again, we're POLAD Foundation is in North Minneapolis at 1200 West Broadway, in the same building where the Peace Foundation, the Northside Achievement Zone, and the ever-so-quiet and covert Northway Community Trust. And Mr. Evers, do you remember?
Yes, yes.
The executive director there is Wesley Walker, who in 2008 wrote a check up front for $50,000 to a firm in Chicago, his buddies, to do a survey on businesses or what would be a good business on Broadway Avenue to try to increase economic development, to try to create entrepreneurship programs, et cetera, et cetera. Well, someone put the check, well, his buddies put the check in the bank. They made $50,000, and we have never gotten a study for that. But yet, you know, Northway Community Trust has this $10 million endowment for the North West Area Foundation, Gary Cunningham over there, and still they are able to operate in North Minneapolis and not to be held accountable at all. But getting back to my earlier point, we have a situation now in North Minneapolis where the Carl Polat Family Foundation is attempting to influence and control funding to nonprofits that they feel like playing with. There are regular meetings in North Minneapolis with several foundations, including the Minneapolis Foundation, the McKnight Foundation, the Otto Bremer Foundation, and General Mills Foundation, and a couple more larger foundations. And from what I'm understanding from our sources, is that if you don't play well with Sandra Samuels and Michelle Martin at the Peace Foundation and at Northside Achievement Zone, you're pretty much, it's a case of gentrification of nonprofits that don't play well. And so people are really concerned about this now, and I actually have the email, and I'm going to break it on Monday morning and put it out there because they're more concerned with controlling the flow of the money and having a bike shop in North Minneapolis rather than solving the mission, according to the Carl Pollad family website, which is the education and the poverty piece and the business piece to get people back, you know, on their feet. And so how this bike shop that employs maybe 2 to 5 people, and these are Caucasian people, I don't know how this is going to fit or work. And it seems to me like the Peace Foundation, NAS, and also the Carl Pollad Family Foundation and the people that are playing in North Minneapolis for the last year, 3 years, are only concerned with, you know, sunshining fun things rather than solving the problem from the bottom up. And your thoughts on that? If there was a big wave, welcome.
For the purpose of the international audience that we have with us today on this occasion in the United States, just kind of remind or highlight what sunrise, sunset means.
What's that now?
The political term for the term you just used, sunrise, sunset. Could you just clarify, you know, for our international audience, how that term is identified in the United States?
You know, I'm losing you here, so if you go ahead and let me call in and you just explain that, I'll be right on the back end there.
Okay. What Mr. Allen was talking about is a process in which certain programs are given a date to expire, if you will. And what Mr. Allen was basically saying is that what we see happening quite a bit are programs that are initiated, brought into a community, in this case the north side of Minneapolis. And it appears that dollars are being given for long-range activities, economic uplifting, and et cetera. In fact, when it really is not, it's just a small minimal commitment with a big ripoff. And then when the examination is asked for with respect to how well the monies were spent, nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I am back, Mr. Edwards, and I want to let our national and international listeners know, our domestic and international listeners, as we should put it, is that, okay, this foundation, the latest report online is the 2009 report. Let me just get back to exactly where I was here. For 2009, they have what's called economic crisis guarantees, grants for job retention and temporary jobs in Minnesota. They put out a little bit over $4 million, giving out 83 awards. Now, if you go to the website, which I just happen to have in front of me where I'm broadcasting from in the studio, I'm looking down the list. And it's a list of who's who across the Twin Cities. But now if you take a closer look there, you'll see, let me just get down there alphabetically, you will see Summit Academy, OIC. You will see Higher Minnesota. You will see Phyllis Wheatley Community Center and those type of black organizations or organizations that deal with poverty in the mostly poor of color situation or community. You never see more than $5,000 to $10,000 given to these organizations. Like Summit Academy, OIC in 2009, they gave them 10 grand. And I'm calling that, you know, I'm just going to step out and call that off the board hush money.
Right.
Okay. 10 grand is not enough to do very much with when you have, some academy has something like, 20, 30 employees, and I mean, there's a lot of things going on, but that's like, here you black people, you take this 10 grand, you got some money from the Pollad Foundation, and, you know, there's never been any press release. Louis King has never distributed this information and said, hey, all right, you know, we've gotten 10 grand from the Pollad Foundation. This stuff is done in the dark, it's kept in the dark, until you go to the website and you actually look at Community Action Council, Incorporated, they got $90,000. And then African American Family Services, you know, that's Lisa Jones. They actually got $60,000. Okay, and this
wow,
is for the
okay.
job, this was job retention and temporary jobs in Minnesota. These are the economic grant crisis. But when I get back in town next week, excuse me, I'm asking to request this information from African American Family Services because $60,000 sounds to me like this was just general operating funds, that there was no program involved. And actually on the website it's not stating any programs. It's just like, here, we give you $60,000, you know, just, you know, be cool with that and move around. North Point Health and Wellness, they have a really odd number, $63,898 in 2009. And this, like, this is the latest report, Resource Inc., $78,000 in 2009. And, excuse me, let me just keep looking here. Youth Link, $72,000. So there's a bunch of agencies here that have received an overwhelming amount of money from the Carl Polat Family Foundation. And, you know, a lot of people in town, they don't know what for, what program is going to, how the money, especially the 2009 economic crisis grant, which is a list of a whole lot of different community organizations that, you know, are wheelers and dealers in North Minneapolis as well as the Twin Cities. But you're wondering, like, okay, if this is for job retention, whose job are they retaining? And it's obviously, to me, just from looking at this, is staff already on hand. Another thing about the Carl Polat Family Foundation, you won't find these people around North Minneapolis after 5 p.m. You know, they're in their cars and, you know, out to the suburbs. The executive director there, Marina Lyon, L-Y-O-N, is the director of the Polat Foundation. I mean, she sent an email that she is trying to influence what I comprehended out of it is that they're trying to be the major players. And they're trying to direct money in North Minneapolis. And to them, you know, the agencies that are over there, you can't let that happen because they will, you know, they will shut you down. They have the political clout right now. You know, you have Sandra Samuels, you have Don Samuels, you have the mayor over there, and the community in North Minneapolis, the African-American so-called leadership or self-appointed leaders will, you know, they give them 7 to 10 grand and, you know, they're good for a year. They won't say anything. Polat Foundation can do anything they want in North Minneapolis.
Well, along those lines, let's ask a series of questions so that people understand, because we're talking quite a bit about local situations.
Yes, sir.
And we sometimes
we have
expand.
Have a
call. Okay, go right ahead. Let's get it in. Appreciate someone calling.
You're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Taylor Michael from New Orleans. How you doing?
Hey, New Orleans, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. I have a question. Like, you talk about Black America, but America's America. I mean, how is it a Black America? You see what I'm saying?
How should we
treat, you know, a Black America if it's not just America?
I think Mr. Edwards and I both would like to answer this. So, if I could, Mr. Edwards, can I interject and then you
go right ahead. Go right ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
My friend from New Orleans.
Yes. I would like to put it like this. We have a Black America. There are Black people in America, okay? We have this core beliefs, a culture, things that go on at this point are out of our control. Next month we have Martin Luther King Day coming up, his birthday celebration. We have Black History Month. But yet those days of our heritage and culture have been monopolized into a fanfare of folly and a social arena of, okay, these are the months for the Black people in America, when 365 days should be for the Black people in America, because there is a Black America. There is a white America. They have, you know, 365 days a year. They can make moves. They're controlling stuff. Yet in our areas or in the communities that I work in, the examples that I see in Minneapolis, Minnesota, there is no Black leadership. There is no Black voice. We're not in control of anything. We have in Minnesota, we have a small base of a percentage of African Americans where the problem can be solved if the right people were put there, but we have spokespersons. I'm not even calling them leaders. I'm calling spokespersons and criminals that will take X number of dollars to turn the other way. So when we say addressing the issues or the problems of Black America, we still have a long way to go, because in 2010, we're still asking America, white America, to, you know, don't give us a check mark insufficient funds. which it has been doing. The stimulus money was meant. President Barack Obama, in his infinite wisdom with his advisors, says, okay, we're going to put some stimulus in, okay, and we're going to send money here, here, and there. But what has happened is a large percent of that stimulus money went to China to pay off some of America's debt. People like that work in my areas in Minneapolis and St. Paul or in Minnesota in areas of construction and things like that, they didn't see a nickel. We have agencies there that have gotten $6 billion in the 10 years, and less than 1% has went to black contractors. So when we say black America, we're talking about issues and challenges and disparities and things that are happening currently that happened 40, 50 years ago. Where's the correction? Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
No, absolutely correct, and I think that the question from our friend in New Orleans is an appropriate one. I would like to, in the best of all worlds, I'm a 71-year-old African-American, first of all, and I would like to have existed in a country in which we could honestly refer to and believe that we were all Americans under the same flag, under the same Constitution, et cetera. Only problem is I'm a historian. First of all, I realize, recognize, and remember that when the Constitution was consummated, African-Americans were not considered to be a whole person. And that's number one. That got us off on the wrong foot right from the get-go. In America, unfortunately, we do refer to groups and cliques and et cetera. We are referred to as a Republican and Democratic America, a conservative and liberal America. In fact, in the election cycles in the last starting 8 years ago, we even now color code ourselves. We're the reds and the blues, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. But when we, to our friend, I don't know if he's still on with us from New Orleans, when we refer to a black America, it is with appropriate deference and respect that black Americans do exist. There are many whites out there, particularly the Tea Party, that would like for, quote-unquote, black America, the sons and daughters of the African, to just disappear from the American scene. That, in my estimation, represents the first significant steps towards genocide. So there is a black America, and black America has a right to ask for a level playing field and a place at the table.
Well, in response to that, I just want to say that I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's just, to me, what makes a person black? Because it's not their color, and it's not their bloodline. And to me, race is a social construct. I mean, you can say what you want, but biologically, there's really no differences. Being black doesn't make you better or worse than anything. You're just like anybody else. You know, even when Christopher Columbus got to the shores of America, he wrote in his diary about the build of the Native Americans. He said nothing of their color because back then, racism wasn't a concept. It didn't exist. People didn't differentiate each other like that. And even in nature, even, you know, you have these snakes that have these color coatings on them, and people say they're poisonous. We have non-poisonous ones that have almost the same identical coloring. So really, even in nature, color means nothing. I don't think being born in America makes you an American. I think it's about a principle of equality, and I don't see why race has to ever be a part of it. Even a black history month, I don't see why we need to have it.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you, sir. Your hypothesis, you know, sounds firm. The only problem is, number one, going back to Christopher Columbus, whatever it was that Christopher Columbus wrote in his diary, he didn't know where he was. He thought he was in China. You know what I mean? Let's be for real. He didn't know he was in a place called the Americas, okay? And he certainly did not understand the dynamics. I disagree with you also that the issue of race. In fact, the very country that Christopher Columbus, and that, by the way, was not his Christian given name, as I think you know, even the country that he came from was ripe with racism because of the longstanding conflict between Spaniards and Moors. There was a lot of race. There was race in Spain, race in Portugal.
That was nationalism.
Yeah, no, that was racism in Italy and et cetera there. If one studies the impact that the Moors, who were black and of North Africa, had upon the southern hemisphere, or in this case the southern Mediterranean, race was a factor. It had nothing to do with nationality, though religion had a role to play. So you and I, you know, would disagree on that, but I understand.
No, I mean,
no,
I'll give you that.
Question,
I'll give you that, because
well,
thinking back about Shakespeare,
me,
I remember the Moors.
The original question was the existence of blacks in America, and I say this to anyone that asks that question because it's a philosophical question in some respects. It's all in the eyes of the beholder. But let me say this to you also, sir. Race does play a factor, and statistical data unfortunately shows that. When you talk about racial profiling, when you talk about those that are incarcerated in the institutions of America, et cetera, unfortunately, there is a significant disparity, and it surrounds a person identified as blacks, African Americans, Negroes, however one wants to refer. And some way or another, the system has decided to take a more aggressive and appropriate action against that particular group of people by race than it does others. Maybe at some point in time, someone could explain it to us.
I understand, and I do, and I actually do. Thinking back, I remember even reading Shakespeare and about the Moors and stuff like that, and how they were discriminated upon. So you're right on that. I just didn't think it was as generalized as it apparently may be. But you're the historian, so I'm going to give you the expert opinion and respect that. But I still think that racism plays a part. Statistics, you can prove almost anything with statistics. I mean, really, there's no man or woman or child on this earth that can't do something or can do something better than someone else because of the color of their skin.
I agree. We should not be judged by that. But then on the other hand, I'm always reminded of the statement by Adolf Hitler in the 1936 Olympic Games where he talked in terms of the inferior, quote-unquote, Negro slash African slash superior to his white Aryan race. So, you know, at some point in time, race comes into play. But, sir, your observations are keen, and
excellent.
We appreciate, and we hope we hear from you again.
Yeah,
no
please
problem.
Call again, sir. We appreciate it, sir.
All right,
we'll listen
you.
To your show, too. All right, Mr.
Mr. Allen, I think that was a good, tough series of questions and observations, and it's a debate that there needs to be more of. I mean, I know that as an older African-American, I was taught. I used to sit around, particularly my grandfather on my mother's side, who I'm here with my beloved mother, who's now 90 years old. We used to hear that discussion about we're all Americans. But, you know, when you listen to the Tea Party and you listen to Newt Gingrich and you listen to Senator McConnell and you listen to Rand Paul, the newly elected senator out of Kentucky, and et cetera, you know, they clearly let you know that race is a factor and give you the example with respect to Senator-elect Rand Paul out of Kentucky when he started saying that it was ill-advised that civil rights was put in place to protect the franchise and the safety of the African-American or Negroes, as we referred to in 1963, 64, and 65. So unfortunately, there are many out there in very significant and powerful positions who do see race as an issue.
Yes, Mr. Edwards, that last caller, his name is Taylor Michael, M-I-C-K-A-L. He's from New Orleans, and he discussed a lot of topics dealing with race, and I think we'll reach out to him to try to maybe get him back, you know, and do like a formal show and have this conversation during Black History Month. I think this will be very informative for our listeners.
I hope that he agrees to it because I think it would be a beautiful discussion, particularly in light, sir, of your guest column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder last week talking in terms of the whole King, quote-unquote, Black History Celebration. I know that raised some concerns at General Mills, but I thought, if with respect to my colleague and co-host, I thought it was well done and raised some serious questions to what you said to the caller from New Orleans right at the very beginning, and that is that Black Americans have earned. Notice the word I use. We have earned by our sweat, blood, toil, and life-giving. We have earned something better than 58 days out of the year.
yes, exactly. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of interesting comments on that, Mr. Edwards. For our domestic and international listeners, you know, Mr. Edwards has a weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, and every now and then I'll do something brilliant, and I would send it over to their editor and publisher, and they would like it. And so this last week here and this week, they had published the weekly newspaper. They published Free at Last, Check Again. Martin Luther King's legacy is celebrated as a once-a-year social event. And it just got down to the points of that, you know, at what point I think that these groups missed reading Martin Luther King's, Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King's last book. And his last focus before he was shot was focusing on economic development, because people of color, including black people, I'm just going to include everybody, we don't want to sit at the lunch counter. We want to own the lunch counter.
Absolutely.
These social events, you know, like this year, General Mills is bringing in Cory Booker, the mayor of New Jersey. I mean,
Newark.
And he's done some really amazing things in Newark, and you got to give him credit for that. But General Mills is always safe. One of the things I say in the story, they would never bring a Spike Lee, Honorable Minister Farrakhan. They wouldn't bring in Al Sharpton. They wouldn't even bring in Jesse Jackson, okay? So I think that the message they're sending out, you know, you people get up for breakfast.
Brother Dyson is a glowing example of that. Brilliant, brilliant thinker, articulator, and et cetera, down there in your part of the country where you're at right now in Raleigh.
I made some points, and I had some really nice email responses and some calls, and it's just that we have to take control. You know, like the last listener to that call, you know, I'm just checking out his website. I mean, there is an argument there. It's not a good argument, but, yeah, you know, in some of the cases, like we found out from the 2010 Minneapolis Disparity Report, in some of the cases where black America or people of color have not participated has been at the hand of their own, you know, in those power positions to make those decisions.
Absolutely.
And so we have to look at that factor. And then another factor, we have people, example, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. There is no black conscience when that person leaves the office and goes to his house or her house, okay? I'll get to that the next show, but, you know, there's no sense of black consciousness at all, you know? It's because if you look at it and you try to figure out why these people, I know a gentleman had a claim with the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. It was obviously, to me, being a layman looking in from the outside and listening to both sides as an investigative reporter, that, okay, this company did something wrong to this gentleman, okay? They let a customer spit in this guy's face in a parking lot. They had some guys that were going to beat him up. They had him arrested a bunch of times and said he was sitting in a car with a baseball bat to try to beat up some people inside this particular store. The guy hasn't had a driver's license or a car for 17 years,
mm-hmm.
okay? And this stuff is not considered. But when you look at this and you go into those places like the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, there's no consciousness for this. They're more friends with the corporate entities that the individuals are going after than serving the individuals. So
on that particular point, and by the way, the gentleman you were just talking about, you know, if I'm not mistaken, that's also the gentleman who came to the Civil Rights Department. Maybe it's a different one to show you how they operate up there.
Yeah.
Came to the department to discuss his case, which had been, at that point, in the department for 6.5 years, which is in total violation of their own rules. And the Civil Rights Director at that time, Michael Jordan, had him arrested and incarcerated. And he was put in jail for 3 days before we were able to make the right kind of political connections to get him out of jail. I mean, it doesn't even begin to be funny. We, by the way, over the next 30 days, we're going to be taking a closer look at the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and a very egregious action that they have been involved in for quite some time, and it goes across the tenure of at least the last three directors, including the interim director, Michael Kip Brown. Mr. Allen, just kind of give you a heads up, but also our domestic and international audience. We're going to be talking about how cases, first of all, misdeclarations were made to complainants that their cases were being investigated. Then they were sent a letter that no probable cause had been determined. But unbeknownst to them, but not unbeknownst to many of the powerful law firms in the Twin City, which were representing some of these entities like Target, if you will, mm-hmm. Alliance Hospital, and et cetera, that the case files were then shredded. And we will be taking a look at some specific cases, and we will be naming the complainants in these cases, and we'll be asking the Civil Rights Department to commit itself to an audit. See, they've never had their caseload audited, if you think about it.
No, they haven't.
It's also one of the reasons that we raised the question in a public hearing a couple weeks ago on the disparity study on why the commission has not had a public hearing. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, which is the counter entity of the Civil Rights Ordinance and the Civil Rights Department, why they had never in 10 years had a public hearing on their own. One of the reasons is they are extremely concerned that they have never had an audit of the caseload. And again, for our international and domestic listeners, this is a department which has jettisoned hundreds, if not maybe a couple thousands of cases, and in many respects they have committed a civil felony. Because they have written letters saying that they, upon investigation and et cetera, no probable cause has been found. There are a number of cases that they will not be able to produce the case files, if you will, to be able to enforce or reinforce the determinations that they said they made. And that's just how bad it is up there or in our city, if you will. So I just want to kind of give folks a heads up that we'll be talking about Pacific cases, and Pacific citizens, basically the majority of them persons of color, the majority of that persons of the African-American persuasion, who really had their rights and their franchise violated. So,
yeah, I agree 100% on that. So, yeah, that's going to be exciting. And on Monday here, too, we're going to I'm going to release that email from the POLAD Foundation, which will seriously open up some eyes of some people, these nonprofits in North Minneapolis that are wondering how come they're not getting any funding, how come they're being turned down by the Minneapolis Foundation, out of Rimmer Foundation, and the McKnight Foundation. And I'm going to just tell you simply, the POLAD Foundation is there in North Minneapolis to make a power move and what I call gentrification on nonprofits that don't play.
Right.
Northside Achievement Zone. And one more thing I want to interject there, too, on that, Mr. Edwards, is that now you remember Peace Foundation. Peace Foundation was given all these accolades, and I think in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, yes, and 2009 for bringing the crime rates so down, that their street work and all their hustle and bustle was just really wonderful, that they brought the crime rate down. And now this year, you know, they're supposed to get Project Ceasefire. So right before Project Ceasefire, very good, yay or nay from Project Ceasefire, the Peace Foundation sent out an email to a lot of folks. They didn't send it to me, but someone did forward it to me that said, in essence, that they were refocusing away from violence, like their 501c3, their Articles of Incorporation, the activities they address to focus on education as the Northside Achievement Zone.
Right.
So what happened was, you know, there was no money for Ceasefire. Ceasefire got shut down in Minneapolis. It never got started, actually. And they were expecting this with great cities or great neighborhood grants that actually went to the McKnight Foundation. And
yes, it did.
So they didn't get a piece of that. So now they're sitting there. But, you know, we understand through our sources that there's some funding coming through from somewhere because there's a lot of new cars in the parking lot. We might have to give Reverend Andre Dukes a call from Shiloh Church.
International Ministries, right. Mm-hmm.
And since he told me on camera that he was a secretary there, we want to find out a little bit of information what this secretary is doing in the community in North Minneapolis. So
now, on that particular point, because we're coming down to the year end, next week, of course, we will be appropriately finalizing, going over some issues that we've raised over the last, last week you said 50. I think that's a little less than that. We're about into 35 weeks or something like that because we started in May, correct?
Yeah, we started in May, but, you know, we did a couple of offshoot shows, you know, during the week.
Oh, okay, you're counting them. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what we want to do is, let me give you a couple of examples. We've never seen any documentation specifically or anything on the district's new Crystal Palace, which is its headquarters that will be built along the 1200 block of West Broadway. Now, we were in a meeting 2 weeks ago in which Lynn Littlejohn, who is the community representative for the powerful Mortenson Construction Company, which she said that they had already achieved 36% minority participation based on the demolition, right? We have a committee, two committees actually, one put together by the district, one put together by Mortenson, of so-called leaders. In the case of the district, of Velma Corvell, the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, is on that panel. They were unable to answer any number of questions. James Bowles, the diversity director for the Mass Public Schools, was supposed to get back to us, as he was supposed to get back to us on, what was it, Mr. Allen, the 8th, 9th of June of this year, yeah, with certain information and et cetera about bonding and insurance and et cetera. We have that. Now, have we had any update from the district on where they're at with respect to the letting of contracts, subcontracts for the district's headquarters?
No, we have no updated information. They have not, you know, Ms. Erica submitted the community benefit agreement to them. We have mm-hmm. no information on the community benefit agreement, and this is all stuff that we're going to have to really tear into and start following up with, you know, first thing Monday morning.
Okay. We'll be back up into Minnesota probably within a week.
Yeah, about a week or so.
We've got some things. We've been called away to a series of meetings in the southeastern part of the United States. We will not identify the specific location. This is a specific meeting being called to take a look at a strategy over the next number of months. But let me go back also to this, because this is kind of a fun piece with me. Do we have any updates? Do you have anything on the blogs with respect to the controversy with the Council of Black Minnesota and their keynote speaker for the Martin Luther King's celebration in January?
You know, matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, we talked about that last week, and let me just go back here. And if they have the same thing up after we talked about it, let's see here, Council of Black Minnesotas. If they have the same thing up that they had last week, I will be very upset.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. I'm just on the computer here sitting. I'm actually sitting comfortable in the media room at the relative's house here, and I'm going to go to that site right now. And, you know, they had last year's, oh, my goodness, Mr. Edwards. They haven't changed a thing. They still have the 2010 Dr. Martin Luther King Holiday Celebration. It's going to be on January 18th, 2010.
Okay.
Which means that we have to go back in time. And this is another point that I'd like to make on this. This is how a lot of our black organizations operate. They don't pay attention to detail. At the top of the screen on the website, it has Council of Black Minnesotans. Saturday, December 25th, 2010, and you look at the body of their webpage, they're advertising something that happened 12 months ago.
And you first called that to their attention and to the attention of some of the members, including, if I'm not mistaken, Lisa Jones, who is a political commentator in the Twin Cities, sits on the Council of Black Minnesotans, and I noticed that for whatever reason, they have not touched this specific issue that deals with a former state representative who was actually expelled almost 20 years ago from the Minnesota House of Representatives for fraud and drug charges, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
You are absolutely correct.
Quite a controversy has broken up, but he apparently is to be the keynote speaker for around that same date. I imagine the date would be around the 17th, 18th, 16th of January 2011.
Okay. Maybe
the Council on Black Minnesotans has gotten caught in a time warp.
we might be going back in time, but I'm gonna call up Soul Sister number 69 and ask her, you know, if I can get some information out of her about this particular controversy, because, you know, sure enough, they're kind of keeping a lid on it in some areas, but this is pretty interesting, you know. And when does that dunk? How can I put this? I'm trying to be really nice with it and not curse. But
this is Christmas Day.
Yeah, this is Christmas. Yeah. What determine that someone that, you know, gets pulled over in their car and finds cocaine, and they say it's his son's, and how do you get from
that?
Well,
he said it was the son that wrote the checks.
Yeah, they wrote the checks too. And how do you get from that to speaking to people at Martin Luther King Celebration? You know, I think that's a stretch.
It must be a part of rehabilitation.
I mean, I understand people get better. Everyone has a story, okay? Don't get me wrong. We know that. I got some stories that can tell you how to curl your toes. But the thing is, how do you get from that point? I mean, what have you – I always look at what people do in between. I mean, you have some fatal things that happen to people in a lifetime. But when they get past that point, you know, I always look at, okay, what you did from this point to get where you are. I mean, how many people have you helped lift up? If you're in the nonprofit realm, I mean, what are you doing if you're in the corporate realm? Tell me the people you work for. Let's see, put it out on the table. And all we have with this particular group, Mr. Edwards, is scandal. You know, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I
don't know how that stretch happens. I don't know how these people get from doing, you know, snorting coke one day and then speaking for the Council on Black Minnesotans for their Martin Luther King celebration. Martin Luther King, would, you know, he wouldn't tolerate that, I don't think. So
I don't think he would either. It certainly was not consistent with the legacy that he left with all Americans, if you will. And I'm just not sure. An additional question as we begin to wrap. We've got about, what, Mr. Allen, about 3.5, 4 minutes.
Yeah,
okay. How are we with Safe Streets or Street Safe? big program that was going to come into our community under the auspices of the Minneapolis Council of Churches. A lot of meetings. We talked about that last week's program. You both, I've written a couple pieces. Any update? Do we have any update on the computer? I mean, have they announced?
We have no updates on Safe Streets or what's coming into the Twin Cities or who's going to do it, when they're going to do it, why they're going to do it. All we know that a little bit under 3 weeks ago, a delegation from Minneapolis, including Al Flowers, Alfred Flowers, was sent out to Boston to kind of observe this training / crime reduction / community policing type program with the Boston Black Ministerial Alliance with Mr. Reverend Wright out there, and they've been pretty tight-lipped, but we're going to pick that lock from another angle next week and get this information out and let people know what's going on.
All right. Our good friend, the Reverend David Wright up in Boston, the executive director of the Black Ministerial Alliance of Greater Boston, correct, and hopefully maybe they could give us some update. Now, by the way, as we close for our listening audience, both domestic and international, we talk with representatives from Safe Streets, but once they realized that we were journalists and bloggers, and though they told us some significant information, they have not responded to our inquiries. Do I continue to be correct on that, Mr. Allen?
You are correct, Mr. Edwards. You're absolutely correct on that. We did. I called all the numbers they gave me, you know, about 6-7 different numbers, left messages, called back several times. And still, I mean, it was like calling the YMCA headquarters in Chicago.
We have 9 different numbers that we call. By the way, maybe we can get our good friend Bruce Bork, who is the head of community relations for the Minneapolis Council of Greater Churches. Maybe Bruce can enlighten us on what he felt took place during his trip to Boston, because the Greater Council was going to be the fiduciary conduit, if you will. But anyways, we're coming up on the end. It's been a beautiful day across America.
Yes, it has.
And on the other hand, there have been many Americans, as we said at the very top of this program, here in Kansas City. We have watched a philanthropic effort that is very impressive, far exceeds what we see happening in the Twin Cities. And at least the Black Ministerial Alliance here, when they say that they're going to give out X number of foodstuffs and et cetera, they do it contrary to the alleged 3,000 chickens that were allegedly given out on Wednesday and Tuesday of last week, which now is down to 12 or 1,300.
Yeah, exactly. Well, with that said, Mr. Edwards, we'd like to wrap it up. I'd like to thank everybody for listening today to On Point. We have just a special one-hour show today. We'll be back next week in its entirety, 90-minute show. We hope that you tune in and call in and participate. Again, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again next year.
which will be our next show. All right.
Merry
Take
Christmas
care, sir. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.